All right, we are live here with a Schloss Rant from the Philadelphia suburbs. Saturday night, 8:35, we're recording this. So right before the league plays their games, so the majority of the games, we already know about the Ravens and the Bengals. And we'll probably touch on that a little bit later with Joe Burrow and the implications that that's going to have on the rest of the season. I know that we'll touch on that in a little, but I always want to lead off with the most important, most valuable segment of the entire podcast, and that is the picks. We are sitting now after last week's 4-1 record at 34-14-2 through week 10 of the National Football League. If we were in that Circa Millions contest out there in the desert in Las Vegas, we would be tied for 7th out of all the participants in that contest. Or contest, I should say. Again, we were 4-1 last week. We've only had, I believe, 2 weeks in which we didn't go at least 3-2. We had 1 week recently there where we were 2-2-1. And I believe in week number 2, we were 2-3. But outside of that, every week has been 3-2 or better. Bunch of weeks there at 4-1 or 4-0-1. And then even 1 week at 5-0 early in the year. To recap the picks last week, this is the first time jumping back on the podcast since we went 4-1. We gave out the Cardinals +2 over the Falcons. The Cardinals win the game outright on a last-second field goal there out there in the desert. The one losing play we had was the Packers +3 against the Steelers. They ended up losing the game by 4. Packers missed a field goal in that game. They had the ball driving down deep into Pittsburgh territory late with an interception by Jordan Love, as we do not come out on the right side of that game. We gave out the Cleveland Browns. I know the Browns lost their quarterback this week. We'll touch on that in a little bit. We gave out the Browns getting to 6.5 against the Ravens. They come back from 2 touchdowns down, and they win the game outright. We gave out the Dallas Cowboys laying the 17 against my New York Football Giants. Again, these huge numbers, you can't be scared to lay them. That was the biggest spread in the National Football League this year. Doesn't mean you go out there and blindly lay them, but knowing the fact that you had DeVito in there, quarterback, you were comfortable laying that with the Cowboys at home. And the 49ers absolutely slaughtered the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think they win by over 30 points, but we easily covered the 3 points there. So again, 4-1 last week, 34-14-2. I am the single best handicapper of National Football League games in the world as far as people who are giving out those picks and making them public. Yes, we're tied for 7th, or we would be tied for 7th if we were in that Circa Millions contest out there in Las Vegas. We are not in that, probably should have at this rate, but we're not in that contest with the podcast or anyone affiliated with it. But again, none of those guys that would be ahead of me, they're not giving out their plays public on Twitter or on a podcast. You can't find them. So that is why when I'm hitting 70.83% of the games against the number, and again, these bookmakers, these odds providers, they are making these numbers as sharp as a tack. In a lot of them, not always, but in a lot of these games, the numbers are pretty darn sharp. I am the number one documented NFL handicapper in the world right now. Without further ado, I just hyped myself up. You know, we're due for some 0-5 weeks. We're due for some 1-4, 2-3 type weeks. But I'm feeling pretty good about the picks this week, and let's get them started right now. As always, try to find the best number for the particular team you're trying to play. We're going to go Bears at the Lions. We're going to lay the Lions 7.5. I think this is kind of like a square play here, but I think at the same time, you have to be okay with laying the 7.5, knowing that Jared Goff and the Detroit Lions and Man Campbell and all the guys there, they're clicking. They're moving the ball on offense. Ben Johnson is one of the best offensive coordinators in football. I would like it to be at 7 and not 7.5, but I think it's okay. I'm okay to lay the hook there. If that comes back to bite me, then so be it. I felt pretty darn confident about this play. You're getting good value. The line has moved to the opposite way. People jumped on the Bears saying that when it opened to 10 that was too many points. And again, I don't love the hook here, but I just think that Detroit is a lot better than Chicago. And, you know, Chicago's been a little bit better recently. They have some wins in recent memory over Carolina, over the Las Vegas Raiders. That was one of the sharp plays of the season when we gave out the Bears getting, I think, the 3 against the Raiders. And we covered that a few weeks ago. But you get the idea here. The Lions are better. I'm okay to lay that 7.5. Next game, Cardinals getting the 6 points at the Texans. I just think this is too many points. This is one of the themes of the National Football League season. If you look at picking these games, if you get a decent quarterback, Kyler Murray's a decent quarterback, or you can say he's undersized, he runs too much, whatever, but we all know he's a decent quarterback, and you're getting almost a touchdown, or you're getting a touchdown without the extra point here with the six, you got to jump on it. Houston is everyone's absolute darling right now. C.J. Stroud for MVP. That is a widespread narrative, something that is pretty crazy to consider that he's only in his rookie year, only 9 games into it. But Kyler Murray right now, he's motivated to keep winning games because that is the way that he is going to keep his job, because that'll push his team, the Arizona Cardinals, further and further out of draft contention. So we like the Cardinals here. Getting the 6 points. One website I believe that I look at it said that 22% of the money is on Houston with 31% of the bets. So I think a lot of people are actually with me here, surprisingly, to take the Cardinals. But again, I like the angle there where you got less money versus the percentage of bets on this game. So give me the Arizona Cardinals. We're going back to it where we went last week, but this time getting 6 points at the Texans. Game number three that we're picking, Seahawks at the Rams. The Rams are getting 1 point. I've seen even maybe the Rams as the favorite. Listen, this is the ultimate pros game, okay? This is the ultimate handicappers game. You got a 3-6 team here. You're only getting 1 point, but it's in a division game, and it's at home. So I got to go with the Rams basically to win the game or lose by 1 point here when you're looking at it from the plus one standpoint. I think here I'm getting a great coach in Sean McVay. I'm getting them off a bye. I heard something to the effect of McVay versus Pete Carroll is a very profitable matchup if you side with McVay against the number. So we're going to do that here, even though we're only getting 1 point. Seattle played last week, and I wouldn't say struggled to beat the Commanders, but they definitely were in a game with Washington there until the very end, in which they ended up winning. So I'm okay to take the point here with the Rams, even though I know that they are the worst team. But I just think that this particular matchup, I like getting the point with the Rams and backing the Rams. Game number four, the Vikings at the Broncos. The Broncos are laying 2 at home. Again, this is another one of these true pro games that I'm picking, except this time we're going to lay the 2 points with the Denver Broncos. The last game we're getting a point when talking about the Seahawks at the Rams, but we are going to definitely lay the 2 with the Broncos. I feel like, again, this is sharp in my opinion. I feel like this is one of my sharper plays. I feel like the world is going goo-goo gaga over Dobbs and the Vikings. He's a great story, bouncing around from team to team to the NFL. And the fact that the Denver Broncos on defense, they allowed 70 points earlier in the year to the Miami Dolphins. But look, this is a different team now. Russell Wilson's taking care of the ball a little more. They had a nice win there on Monday night, albeit greatly assisted by a coaching gaffe by the Buffalo Bills. But I'm okay here to lay the 2 points here with Denver. I think this is just a much better team. They've beat some good teams here recently. I mean, they've beaten the Chiefs. They've beaten the Buffalo Bills. So I'm okay here to lay the 2 points with Sean Payton at home, Russell Wilson quarterback in the Broncos. So give me the Broncos -2 over the Minnesota Vikings. And the final game that we have here, the Titans at the Jaguars -7. The Jags are coming off an embarrassing loss, and we'll take the Jags -7. They're coming off an embarrassing loss. I just don't think the Titans are very good. I know Will Levis had 4 touchdowns a couple weeks ago, but I think that the Jags need this game. I think that Trevor Lawrence eventually has to have a great game. He's only thrown 10 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. I think eventually he's just going to be better, and maybe this is the spot to do it against the Tennessee Titans. So the picks for week number 11. The Lions laying 7.5. The Cardinals getting 6 at Houston. The Rams getting a point at home against the Seahawks. Broncos laying 2 against the Vikings. And the Jaguars at home laying 7 points. As always, shop around. Try to find the best particular number for the team you want to take. Now, we talked earlier, we mentioned earlier a little bit about the Bengals and the Browns and the Ravens. And I think that's the most interesting division right now as we switch from picks to a little bit running the league and giving you some, you know, quite honestly, analysis late on some of these stories and some of the things that went down between Monday and now Saturday night here. So I think here, let's start with the Ravens and the Bengals. Joe Burrow's out. I predicted that the Bengals would win over 10.5 games this year. That's probably not going to happen with Burrow being out for the year and Browning stepping into quarterback, kid from University of Washington out there in Seattle. So the Bengals, this is just a crushing injury. And out there around the league and, you know, different circles, people wondering, was Joe Burrow hurt? Did the Bengals not disclose it? If this is the case where he was injured and they didn't disclose it, I want a second-round pick taken away or first-round pick, whatever. The NFL needs to show that they stand behind their policy that they have had in place since 1947. Let me quote something a little bit here from the rule because I looked it up. This was on a 2017 bulletin I was able to find from the league website, and it says, the personnel injury report policy has been a cornerstone of public confidence in the NFL for many decades. The credibility of the NFL teams, owners, and team personnel requires full compliance with uniform enforcement of the policy. I mean, I could go on and on, but that sounds like a pretty strict rule, and it should have some pretty severe punishment. This thing goes on to say that the information must be credible, accurate, timely, and specific within the guidelines of the policy, which is of paramount importance for maintaining the integrity of the game. Violation of the policy may result in commissioner discipline, which may include a fine, fines, suspension of anyone involved, and possible forfeiture or draft choices. So you get the idea there. This is a pretty serious thing. If Burrow and whatever he had on his arm during the week or before the game, when it was shown, was really injured and they didn't report anything about it, the Bengals deserve to be punished. At this rate, the Bengals are done. And the reason why I think they're done and not the Cleveland Browns, the team in their division, is simply because the Bengals don't have as good of a defense as the Cleveland Browns. And Cleveland's already won games without Deshaun Watson this year. They beat the San Francisco 49ers. I mean, you want to talk about a quality win. There it is. The Bengals, I just don't think they can do it. They struggled when Burrow, you know, was playing in the beginning of the year, but he was definitely compromised by that calf injury, not able to push off and throw the ball. So they've shown you that they don't have the quarterback playing right. Even if Burrow was in there, it's not going to be good enough. So I think the Bengals, honestly, I think that they're done. The Ravens improved to, 8-3, 7-3, whatever it is. So they're looking pretty darn good for the postseason. So this division, which was really interesting, say like Sunday afternoon when the Bengals took on the Texans last week, now you're down to the Steelers who are 6-3, the Ravens who are, you know, killing it, either 7-3 or 8-3, whatever they are. Doesn't matter after that game. And now you got the Browns who also have their quarterback out, but at least you know that their defense is going to step up and going to be able to carry them. So I wouldn't go be so quick to rule the Browns out of it. But with the Browns here, I mean, I've said this for a while with Watson. If you want to evaluate the off-the-field stuff and, you know, the possible criminal activities, I can't be a part of that conversation because it's just not something I'm interested in talking about. I think that if any of that is true, he should be thrown in jail and locked up. But clearly, they declined to press charges against him. So we're not going to talk about that. But I've continued to defend the Cleveland Browns with Deshaun Watson in the notion that you had a guy there in Cleveland with Baker Mayfield that from 2018 to 2021, yeah, he won a playoff game against your rival, the Pittsburgh Steelers, but you didn't think he was good enough. And you thought that what you saw with Watson from 2017 to 2020 with the Texans was going to be good enough to get you to the promised land, get you to your first ever Super Bowl in the history of your team. And the Browns have been in the National Football League, I believe, since the late 40s or early 50s. So they've been around a while. And I know Super Bowls didn't start till after that, but you get the idea. You made a decision that what you had in Baker Mayfield wasn't good enough, and you made the decision that bringing in a guy like Watson would elevate your team. And I stand fully behind that. I like when teams take big swings and go in it 100% and don't mess around. And that's what I thought the trade with Watson is going to be. And I was even okay knowing that he was going to be suspended for a big part of last year and he didn't play the year before that because felt like if you could work him back in and get him in there that, you know, this would give your team the best opportunity to get to that Super Bowl. And I'm okay trading all those first round picks because I think if you got the quarterback right, you've got probably a likely Hall of Fame player over there at defensive end and Myles Garrett as well. I think that those are the key ingredients you need to win Super Bowls, get to Super Bowls. I mean, even look at what my Giants did in 2007 and 2011. They had the pass rush. They had Eli Manning, who, you know, not the greatest quarterback, but a guy who's good enough to win big games for you and play well in the big moments. And that's what I thought they'd be getting with Deshaun Watson, who was a winner, obviously, in college with Clemson. So, I mean, this just stinks if you're a Cleveland Brown fan. I say this because this stinks for a Cleveland Brown fan because he was 14 of 14 in that second half. Big comeback win against the Ravens, the team, you know, the team that essentially was your team. I mean, think about it. The Ravens were the Browns after they relocated to Baltimore, and the Browns were gone for 3 years. So that's got to absolutely kill you there that he gets injured in that game of all the teams to get, you know, injured. And I think that, honestly, the reaction around the league and people who cover the NFL, people who even just talk about the NFL podcast, blog, whatever it is that now they're saying with Watson, despite the fact that he struggled since he's been a Brown, now you're saying, oh, they can't win a Super Bowl. It's not going to happen for them this year if Watson's not there. So that just goes to show you that Watson, while he has not been played the best since he's been a Brown, he's been a guy that when he plays well, the Browns are going to have a chance to do really special things. And that's not going to happen anymore. They're going to put in DTR, Dorian Thompson-Robinson. All right, I mean, like, can he be your Jeff Hostetler? Can he be your Nick Foles and, you know, step in as a relief quarterback and win the Super Bowl? No, I don't think so, because this guy's a rookie. Foles had a season where he threw 27 touchdowns before he won a Super Bowl with the Eagles. Hostetler had been in the league, had played games, started games. He wasn't a rookie for the Giants in 1990. So it's not going to happen from that notion. But I think that a good comp for this team, this Cleveland Brown team this year, is the 2000 Buccaneers, not the 02 Bucks that won the Super Bowl. We're talking about the 2000 Buccaneers, which was Dungy's second to last year. They had Sean King, who was a rookie quarterback. You know, Sean King, that went to Tulane, the guy who was on the VEASAN Sports Network there on iHeartRadio, that's Sean King. And he came in, he started all 16 games that year. I know DTR is obviously not going to be starting all 16 games because Watson was in there, but he also started a playoff game. Sean King had 18 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. Not great, but decent enough. So if you're DTR, you're kind of looking to emulate this model. And another comparison for these two teams is you had a Hall of Fame player in Warren Sapp and a most likely Hall of Fame player in Myles Garrett there. Sapp had 16.5 sacks that year. Garrett's got like 12.5 this year already. So it's not a perfect comparison here, but there is a comp for a team with a really good defense and an inexperienced quarterback to get to the playoffs and, you know, see what happens. Obviously, that Bucs team lost their only playoff game, but I think Cleveland's ceiling is maybe winning a playoff game. I think that's pretty much where they're at, especially if they end up playing like the Jaguars, who are going to win the division probably, but maybe they're just not as good. So I think that they've got a shot maybe to win a playoff game, even if it's DTR in there, or even if they go back to PJ Walker, the quarterback from the XFL. So honestly, we had a situation here where the AFC, it just seems to have so many teams. But now when you get injuries to Burrow and you get injuries to Watson, it really looks like, despite how flawed the Chiefs are offensively, which I never thought I'd say with Patrick Mahomes, it really looks like it's theirs to lose. Maybe you throw Baltimore in there as well, but outside of those two teams, I'm not really having much confidence in a lot of them. And then you talk about the NFC. I mean, to go around the league here, it really, really appears it's the Eagles to lose. And I don't say that to, you know, be happy. I understand I'm sitting here in the Philadelphia suburbs, but I am obviously no Philadelphia Eagle fan. But I think that this is really the Eagles to lose. The 49ers are not going to get the number one seed. I don't see the Eagles losing two times. And I think that they play later on in the year. But I just think that for the Eagles, this is really theirs to lose 100% here. And to get back a little bit with the Browns, I mean, they're just a franchise that's just cursed. I mean, talk about the drive against the Broncos. Talk about drafting Johnny Manziel. Countless quarterbacks. Talk about a player running with his helmet off the field, you know, to lose a game. Talk about Joe Thomas getting inducted to the Hall of Fame, playing for the Browns his whole career, but losing over 60% of his games. I mean, it's just absolutely crazy. But again, on the NFC side, to really swing back here, go around the league, as I just mentioned, I just think it's the Eagles to lose. I think the Cowboys are good, but I think when they step up in competition, I don't think they're as good as the Eagles, point blank. And I think the Eagles, I mean, they are built in a really simplistic way. Dominant on the O-line, dominant in the D-line. They've got weapons. Me as a Giant fan, I mean, I'm just absolutely sick in the notion that they lost out on Devontae Smith in that 2020 draft or 2021 draft, whatever it was. I think it was 2020. Lose out on Devonta Smith by one pick, trade back with the Bears. And then not only that, what I just do not understand is A.J. Brown, the other great receiver on the Eagles, who's better than Smith, he could have been had for a first-round pick. Where was Joe Shane to trade for him last offseason? So that's just upsetting that the way that the Eagles have constructed their team, they had two players that won the Giants missed by a pick. The other one, they should have gotten rid of the first-round pick, at least on the other side, the one that the Bears gave them, to get A.J. Brown, solid receiver. And the fact that they are just built in a way that I love, you know, being strong on the O-lines and D-lines, that just destroys me as a Giant fan. But I think that this is definitely the Eagles to lose, even with the 49ers coming back here. So we went around the league here a little bit, a couple more NFL things. Oh, yeah, the Bills. We got to talk about the Bills. So firing the offensive coordinator, that was an absolutely weak move because McDermott, you know what? I understand you have a special teams coordinator, but in the walkthrough before the game and you had an extra day to prepare for this game, you absolutely have got to know. You've got to have your players ready to go, knowing where they got to be on the football field so you don't get 12 men on the field. I heard Phil Simms yesterday with Christopher Mad Dog Russo saying about things the owners know about their football teams, and he said they know how to count, meaning they can count to 12, and it's embarrassing if you lose a game because they miss a kick and you have 12 guys on the field. And that's just, if I'm the owner, if I'm the Pegulas, that might not be something I put up with if this is the reason why they missed the playoffs. And I know with Burrow being out for the year, that really helps the Bills. They're probably still going to be able to sneak in even if Miami wins the division because there's still enough time with 7 games left, even though that they're very flawed. But that was a weak move to fire Dorsey. Just weak. I mean, because they weren't going to do it if that special teams error didn't occur. And again, the fact that that's not gone over in a walkthrough where your players know, that's your fault if you're the head coach. I understand, you know, high school football, college football, we all want to say like that's comparable to the NFL in certain spots. Obviously, it's not. But the one spot that it is comparable is when we had walkthroughs on Friday, and this is me as a former special team player. Obviously, I was a nobody. It wasn't even a shot I could play for a Division III school. But even me, they'd go over special teams, and I was on special teams, and we'd go over it, and they'd be like, Schlossberg, you're the middle wedge guy. I don't care if you're playing offensive line in the game for any reason, if someone goes down. But they say, no matter what, on the kick return, you are the middle wedge guy. You better be out there. And it was that simple. I knew where I had to be. So the fact that these professional players in the NFL didn't know where they needed to be, and it messed it up where they had 12 guys on the field, led to just an absolutely weak, weak, weak move by McDermott to fire the offensive coordinator. If you wanted to fire someone, maybe fire the special teams coordinator. And even that would be just as weak because it's your responsibility ultimately as the head coach, in my opinion, to make sure you got 12 guys on the field. If you think about it, you're not calling plays on the offensive end. And apparently, I heard this with Mike Lombardi on with Doggy, that he is calling defensive plays. So I've said this before about offensive coaches, so I'm going to say it about you, McDermott. Take your head away from the stupid play sheet, put it down, give it to someone else, and coach the damn team. Coach the whole team. Because if you did that, you wouldn't have ended up firing your offensive coordinator and losing the game. So, yeah, coach the whole team. Get your head away from the stupid play sheet on defense for him because he's a defensive guy, obviously. So, yeah, that's my thought about the Buffalo Bills situation. But, again, with Burrow being out now, I think they've got a good shot to make the playoffs, even if it's as that 7th seed. All right, and before I go, I got to talk about the New York Yankees. All right, because Garrett Cole wins the Cy Young, no surprise there. You're now in a situation, Brian Cashman, with your defiance, where you've had the MVP of the league, Aaron Judge, who played just as well this year. I know he's injured, but when he was in there, he played just as well as he did last year, a season in which he hit 62 home runs. You've got a Cy Young Award winner, and you're just wasting everyone's time. You're wasting two players in their absolute prime who've won nothing. And we all know you're not going to go out there and sign Ohtani, even though he can't pitch this year. You're not going to probably trade for Juan Soto, even though this guy is a guy who I begged, cried, and pleaded for in 2022 when it was known he was made available. So you're probably not going to do enough to make the team, you know, significantly better. You're probably just going to add little bullpen arms and some back-end starting pitch. And even though the fact that your starting pitching is terrible, and Rodon is probably an absolute bust if he doesn't totally do a 180 based on how he pitched last year. So Cole winning the Cy Young, it's cool. He deserved it. Congrats to him. But it just angers me even more as a Yankee fan because you're wasting the primes of Aaron Judge and Gerrit Cole. And what? One more thing about Cashman. Stop picking on Giancarlo Stanton. All right, it was your idea to bring him here. I was very supportive of this. I was running around Scottsdale, Arizona, celebrating Giancarlo Stanton coming to the Yankees when they acquired him in December of 2017. But if you're Brian Cashman here, get it together, make some moves, put your big boy pants on, bring players in that are going to help this team win so you're not wasting time, and stop criticizing Stanton and his availability. That's not going to make it any better. That's not going to pump him up. That's not going to get him to do things differently. Unfortunately, the way his body is, it stinks that he's this injury prone. I mean, he's just a chiseled athlete. But it is what it is, and there's not much you're going to do to change it. And definitely not criticizing him like that is going to do it. So that's it with the Yankees. Schloss Rant Live, Philly Suburbs. We've got a big Sunday slate tomorrow. Lions laying the 7.5. Cardinals getting 6. Rams getting 1, Broncos laying 2, and the Jaguars laying 7. Those are the picks, 34, 14, and 2. We would be tied for 7th in the Circa Millions if we were in that competition. So we're hitting plays against the spread once again at 70.83%. Schloss Rant, Philadelphia Suburbs. We'll see you later, everyone.